Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is writer Ann Serling. Prior to becoming a full-time writer, Serling was an early education teacher with a degree in elementary education from Elmira College. In addition to publishing poetry, she also adapted two Twilight Zone teleplays into short stories that appeared in a collection called Twilight Zone, The Original Stories. She recently published a beautifully written and very moving and personal memoir about her late father, the TV pioneer and creator of the Twilight Zone, Rod Serling. It's called As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, and it was published by Citadel Press. Serling also serves on the board of directors for the Rod Serling Memorial Foundation and has been involved with the Rod Serling School of Arts Fifth Dimension program. And I welcome you to the show. Now, before we talk about this memoir, which I was really floored by how beautifully written it was, Anne, I want to touch on the evolution of this book. What made you write it? What made you publish it almost 40 years after Rod Serling's death?
Well, I had originally started a book called In His Absence, and it was sort of a cathartic exercise to try and work out my grief, because I was still very much trying to navigate my way out of that, and not successfully. So a few more years go by, and I decided once again to try the book again. And in the interim, I'd heard some things that had been said about my father that were just fallacious things that, you know, didn't describe a man that I knew at all, who wasn't someone remotely familiar to me. And so I decided to work through the grief, and also it was a vehicle to set the record straight about who my dad really was.
Yeah. Well, I think you did a great job. It's really moving. I had never known anything about Rod Serling except for his fabulous television show, and you really captured the man, I think. So tell us a little bit about him. People only know him as the narrator for The Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I think, the people that watch The Twilight Zone are anticipating, this dark shadow coming off, walking across the MGM soundstage. And the dad, the man I knew, was anything but this serious, angry person. And who my dad really was, playful, very childlike. He was a practical joker. He had a brilliant sense of humor. I guess the antithesis of what one might have thought Rod Serling was.
Yeah. You describe him much differently than I would have thought. Although he was a serious person, I know he went to war during World War II, and you describe how the war changed him immensely, and he was wounded. So tell us a little bit about that experience and what you have gathered from it.
The day after he graduated from high school, he enlisted. He had been hoping to go to Europe because he really wanted to fight the Nazis and was disappointed that he was sent to the Philippines. He left what was an incredibly idyllic childhood, as a lot of these kids did, not realizing what was ahead of them. What I found really profound was, as I read the letters that my dad was writing to his parents and his parents were writing to him while he was in training camp, they're so poignant because they're letters like you would write to a child at summer camp. That piece of it really broke my heart, because what we do to these kids, shipping them out, and as my dad, when he got to the Philippines, and he was at a place called Laos, where some of the fierce fighting was, the extreme from where he'd been as a child to, in the throes of war was so difficult. While he was there, his father died, and even though the war was over at that time, he didn't have enough points to get back to the funeral. And he never really could reconcile that in his head. It always bothered him. Originally, when he got out of the war, he was going to major in
physical education,
But because he was still so traumatized, he switched his major to language and literature. And the quote was, he needed to get it off his chest. He needed to get it out of his gut. He needed to write.
Yeah. And did he ever talk about that in any of those letters to people, that describing some of his war experiences prior to becoming a writer?
Well, not in specific letters that I'd seen. What I saw, some of the episodes where you can tell, he's battling that emotion of how to get past this.
But you do pretty much describe that he became a writer so that he could exorcise some of these demons from the war.
Right, right. With his quote, he had to get it out of his chest, he had to get it out of his gut. And then it became that he found he couldn't write meaningful episodes without dancing toilet paper, you know, jumping across the screen. He couldn't write about the little boy Emmett Till, who was so savagely murdered, if it had any indication that it was in the South or Southern names. Or, and then there was another show we did where the New York skyline showed, and it was the Chrysler building, and the sponsor was Ford, so they had to black it out. I mean, just ludicrous demand.
I mean, this is how he got the reputation as an angry man, right? He had to fight all of this silliness in order to be able to, reveal his vision about the culture. Now, I also found it illuminating how you mentioned how much Rod Serling hated prejudice and racism. Where do you think that came from for him, that hate for that? Did he experience it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. His first dose of prejudice was actually directed toward him from one of his own people. He was blackballed from a Jewish fraternity for dating non-Jewish girls. I think that may have been the start of it, but I think he just had no tolerance for it. He just thought it's wrong.
Yeah, and he obviously came of age in an era when it was running rampant, especially in this country.
Right.
Now, like we were talking about just a few minutes ago, your dad did try to write socially conscious and, you know, sociological stories, and he was censored so often. So that's why he turned to science fiction, mm-hmm. which I think is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I had never thought of that. And when you bring it up in the book, I thought, wow, how brilliant.
Yeah, he decided that an alien can say what a Democrat or a Republican can't. And the sponsors didn't get it. It slipped right under the radar. And
yeah, but now Democrats and Republicans really are aliens.
Yeah, true.
So that was it. Did he ever talk to you about his writing and about what he was writing? I know you were young when he was doing most of his writing.
I don't remember many of the... Night of the Meek, which was a Christmas episode we would watch every Christmas. Mm. So that was sort of a family episode. There was a night gallery he did where there was a hunter that went on these... What are they called? And they bring back all the animals.
Oh, safaris.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And my father and I both had similar feelings about that. This guy had so many animal parts, he couldn't even fit in his house. They were piled high in the garage. And we both found that a little abhorrent. So he wrote a night gallery about a hunter. And the catch was that in the end, the animals were not on the wall. It was the hunters.
Ah.
So we kind of worked on that one together, but it was mostly his ending. And then there were other stories that he wrote, Storm and Summer, and I remember him telling me, you're really going to like this one.
Yeah, because this series ended when you were still a little girl. I know it ended in 1964, right? Yeah. Do you think your dad would be amazed at how this one program has stood up through the generations and continued to influence so many people?
Oh, absolutely. He was also quoted as saying that he felt his stuff was momentarily adequate, but that it would not stand the test of time.
Wow. Wow. Well, why do you think it has?
Well, I think because, you know, what he wrote about, we're still dealing with, and you know, these social issues, moral issues, prejudice, you know, all these things, scapegoating, rage, it's all still
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm. I know you did a lot of research for this book. Tell us a little bit about some of the people that you ended up interviewing in real time for this book. Did you find any surprising facts about your dad that you hadn't known?
One guy I found, and I was fortunate to find, was an old war buddy of my dad's, and that meant a great deal. And he was the one that remembered when my father had heard the news that his dad had died, and Russ saw my father coming toward him around the corner and said he had never seen anyone so devastated.
Mm-hmm.
There were more war buddies that unfortunately had died before I could talk to them. I spoke to someone that had gone to Antioch College with both my parents, but I wished I'd had a little more from them. my dad's old childhood friends that he grew up with. I was fortunate enough to have a lot of conversations with them.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk to people in ensuing generations that have been influenced by the Twilight Zone? And talk to, like, people who are going to school to learn how to write? Are they influenced still by Rod Serling's writing?
No, not so much. But I do hear on Facebook people that say, you know, we're writers because of your dad, and he had made such a difference that's why we turned to writing. And
mm-hmm. Did your dad influence you to become a writer, or was that something that you did also to get rid of some of your demons and your devastation over your loss?
I think, you know, even in the beginning, the writing I felt was cathartic, even young.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew if my dad liked what I wrote, he would tell me it was interesting. No, he would tell me. If he didn't like what I wrote, he'd tell me it was interesting.
That's a good way of doing it. That seems to be the way people do it. I know you're also a poet. Have you written any poems about your father and about your family?
Yeah, actually, I started with poetry. Mm-hmm. And the beginning of the book where I write the last time I saw my father, he was lying in a hospital bed, was actually from a poem.
You know, that sounded like a poem to me. That's mm-hmm. interesting. And then, so what happened to these poems? You know, I kept expecting to see poems in this book because I found out you were a poet as I was reading it. Did you decide not to share any, or did you think they weren't good enough, or what?
I don't know, because I know at one point I was thinking, yeah, include some of these poems, and then I guess I forgot about that, because I think that might have been a good idea to have more in them.
Yeah, I kept thinking that I was going to see some. Now, you don't spare yourself at all in this book. You talk about the devastation of your father's death. You talk about the day. You talk about the days leading up to it. Can you talk to us a little bit about that right now?
I can. I couldn't have 6 months ago, probably. I really owe this to my editor, Marlene Adelstein, who said to me one day, your grief is so central to this book, you've got to be more upfront about it. That sort of was the key that, you know, unlocked that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And once I really dug down, I thought, well, I got to say this. This is what happened. It's not just this little thing, it's this that happened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the scene where I wet the bed, you know, that was a little hard, but it happened.
Yeah.
And it happens to other people. I mean, that's grief. That's just raw, you're out of your mind grief.
Yeah, I thought you were amazingly brave to put that in there. That was the night he died, huh?
Mm-hmm.
When you woke up the next
mm-hmm.
morning. Well, can you talk about his death? He was out mowing the lawn. He had a heart attack, collapsed. Your mother took him to Strong Memorial Hospital.
Yeah, he was rototilling, and the rototiller got stuck on the grass, and he's pushing it, and he couldn't get it up. And at that point, I guess my mother must have come out, and she took him to our hospital here. And I was called. I was at my friend's house and told, your father's had a heart attack, hurry. He was in the hospital here, I guess, for about a week, and then released. And during that time, they were deciding whether to do the open heart surgery. I'm not sure exactly how many days, or it just seems sort of a blur of... And his doctor in California didn't think he should have it, but the doctor here thought he should, and we just decided, well, we'll do it here. And although it was 1975, and, you know, the surgery was brand new, we all, including my dad, felt this would be the answer. He'll get better. He'll be able to do what he wants to do. He'll be writing. He wants to write a Broadway play. He wants to write a novel. It's all going to happen. It's going to be slow, but it'll happen. So, you know, that all did not happen was staggering to us all.
Yeah. What kind of surgery were they going to try to do on a man in 1975 who'd had a heart attack?
It was open heart surgery. Whatever that entails.
Maybe putting in stents. I don't even know if they did that then.
I don't know if they did stents then or not. I know there was the balloon thing they did.
Oh, yeah. So that's what they were going to try to do. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we know that he died of a second heart mm-hmm. attack right mm-hmm. after the surgery was finished. Yeah. You know what struck me in the book, too, was the fact that you said they came out and just said he's gone. And your question was, gone where? When will he be back? I thought that was so poignant. And So you remembered so much from that moment, even mm-hmm. though you were absolutely in the throes of grief. Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, my guest is Anne Serling. She's the author of As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. Do you ever wish you could divorce yourself from being Rod Serling's daughter and have an anonymous life and not mm-hmm. have to talk about the legacy and not have to live with it? No?
I feel so blessed.
Yeah.
To have had this man as my father.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Just so lucky.
Yeah. And you're still getting over it, aren't you? And you probably never will.
Apparently. Moments like that, you know, it just kind of bites you and it's...
Yeah. Did writing the book prove to be cathartic, or is it just another step along the road where grief still lives?
Well, I think grief always still lives, but maybe where it's here at one point, maybe along the road, you know, it's down there a little bit. It was cathartic to write this book. What I found even more cathartic was once I'd finished the book and they had asked me, they sold the audio rights, and then they came back and asked me if I wanted to do the recording because it's so personal, and said, you know, if you get upset, don't worry about it. It's a personal story. And I felt so connected to my dad sitting in this tiny dark room, you know, with just this one little light, the headphones, and the director speaking to me and hearing my voice and talking like to my dad, really. Mm-hmm. It was about 2.5 or 3.5 days, and by the time I reached the end, I was weeping. Weeping.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, I've never had anybody cry during the acknowledgments. But then the other guy said, oh, I get it.
Wow, so you were able to actually read the book. Mm-hmm. That's amazing to mm-hmm. me. I would have thought you would never have been able to do that. Wow.
It almost seemed like it was the completion, you know? I'd written the book, now I could do this, and it was the completion.
Yeah, yeah. Now, obviously, you have many family members that are still alive, your sister and your mother's still
mm-hmm.
alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did they think about the book? Did they try to guide you during the writing of it, or try to censor you, perhaps? Tell us.
There's a little bit of censoring going on.
Were they mainly supportive?
Most of the time.
And you can't talk about what they were trying to get you not to reveal, but did you listen to them? Or?
I did. I mean, there was something somebody wanted to add, and I passed it on to my publisher, and what it was a sort of a regurgitation of something I'd already written, and it, you know, it didn't fit in the book. So those calls were made, and perhaps feelings were a little hurt, but,
uh-huh.
you know, this is a memoir. It's not a family book. It was never meant to be a family book. It was a book I wanted to write about my dad.
Mm-hmm. And about yourself.
Yeah.
You reveal so much about yourself.
About our relationship.
Yeah, yeah. So they have read it, and what did they say when they read the final product?
Oh, my mother's first reaction was she thought I'd done a monumental job.
Mm.
And my sister sent me a card. So initially they were very positive.
Huh. Oh, that's interesting. And I know it's whenever I talk to anybody who writes a memoir, they always say, I think about my kids and I think about what the family will think, but I had to be true to this is my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you went through the same
mm-hmm.
same evaluations. Huh.
And I tried to be very careful, you know, with truths. And if I were going to say something that might hurt someone, I wouldn't say it
mm-hmm.
because that's not the focus of this book at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what legacy has your dad left for you that you keep with you?
I think we share the same politics.
Mm.
Unconditional love for our children and just to care about people and animals. And
I know that was the part of the book that sort of surprised me, that he seemed to be such a sweet, endearing man. You know, I mean, the image all of us had was not of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and childlike, and you have photos of him crawling around with the puppies
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and following the dogs around. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah, he was, in so many ways, a little boy.
Yeah, you go back to that quite often. Now, I know you talk about it throughout the book that your dad was a heavy smoker, and he admitted, you know, I mean, his father died at the age of 52 from a heart attack, too. Do you think that that's a legacy that you want to continue to strive to get people to quit smoking? I mean, is that something that your dad would agree with now, too?
Yes, and in fact, I wonder today, would he still be smoking? You know, it's not as easy, you know, with the pressure that people get.
Oh, yeah. Your memories were amazing because I have the same kind of memories. My mother was a smoker. You know, the car would be full of smoke. Mm-hmm. All the kids in the car, they'd be smoking in church. They'd be smoking in grocery stores. They'd be smoking in the doctor's office. Mm-hmm. It was an entirely different world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so do they think that your dad inherited heart disease or that he did die because of the smoking? Did they ever talk to you about that?
The damage was done. There's no doubt. And like I wrote, you know, he tried to quit several times. You know, had he quit when he got out of the war, you know, maybe he would have lived a lot longer.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's so awful when you hear somebody died at the age of 50. I mean, even now, the thought of 50 or 60 seems so young.
And
really.
So unnecessary.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now tell us a little bit about the Rod Serling Memorial Foundation. I had never heard of it. What's the mission? What's it doing?
This is a group that was started by my dad's old childhood friends and his old English teacher, Helen Foley. And it's been around, and I'll have to get back to you how long it's since it's been developed. They were meeting, I think, every 3 months initially to talk about what was going on. At one point, they were fighting to get a Rod Serling stamp out, and that was finally successful. A lot of the people on the board are getting quite elderly now, so we're sort of looking for new people. But Andy Pollack, who's been the president, has been on it for quite some time, and he's terrific. So, and I can send you, if it's helpful, the website that might give you some more
I'll
information.
I'll ask you that at the end of the interview. But what does the foundation do? Is it educational? Does it have Rod Serling festivals to tell us?
Right, and there's a scholarship, too.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So it does scholarship. But it's trying to carry on his legacy of you know, human rights and some of his political feelings. About, you know, eradicating racism and prejudice. And I take it that that's part of it, yeah. Well, what a wonderful legacy. What a wonderful thing to have your friend start something like that for you. You're also involved with the Rod Serling School of the Arts Fifth Dimension program. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Oh, this is this terrific program started by these fifth grade teachers. And they show these Twilight Zone episodes, and they ask the class, you know, what is this? What is this about? One of the most poignant ones was when a teacher showed Monsters Ado on Maple Street, and she asked the class, after they watched the episode, who are the monsters? And the entire class stood up.
Wow.
These are fifth graders that are really, you know, get these programs. They comprehend them. They, you know, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, there seemed to always be a lesson in some of the Twilight Zones. Was your father cognizant of the fact that he was trying to teach, or was he trying to entertain just as much?
I think entertain, teach, get a point across. You know, when you think about a show like Death's Head Revisited, where the captain goes back to Auschwitz for fond memories, and all the people he killed are still there, and do you remember me? You did this, and, you know, just these horrific things that this general or whatever had inflicted on these poor people. I think a little retribution there. And
yeah, I know. So many of the shows are so memorable to me. What is one of your personal favorites?
Oh, I loved Walking Distance.
Tell us about it.
Walking Distance, well, the ones that are so biographical for my dad are my favorites. And Walking Distance is where he goes back to his hometown and sees himself as a little boy, and he sees his mother and his father, and the town hasn't changed. Then has to realize he's changed. And there's another one, A Stop at Willoughby. Do you know that one?
No, I probably wouldn't know the title, but I'm sure I've seen most of the shows.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
A Stop at Willoughby is another idyllic time of, you know, getting off a train to go fishing, sort of the Tom Sawyer atmosphere. It was an episode called In Praise of Pip, which I had not seen until my dad died. And that one was incredibly poignant to me because I realized, and I was watching it more to see my father than the actual episode. Mm. And as I watched it, I realized my dad had used the same routine that he and I had used And it,
that one about Who's Your Best Friend,
yeah,
right?
Who's Your Best Buddy. And
yeah.
There's Jack Klugman saying that to Billy Mummy in this episode. And it was our routine. So it was a tender moment.
Yeah.
And I felt this connection that I had not expected.
Yeah. You must be surprised to have gone back and looked at some of these old episodes to find that he really was writing about his own life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And was there ever anybody who complained about that? I mean, that you remember or heard about?
I don't know. I don't think so. And I know he said once that he couldn't make up characters, so they were always taken off of people he knew. So he may have gotten in a little bit of trouble with that. I don't know. Certainly, he frequently would use names of people he knew. But I don't know the answer to that.
That would be funny to look at an old show and find your own conversation with your father is in one of the episodes. But that was very touching. So he did used to say, "Who's your best friend?"
Mm-hmm.
And you'd say, "You, Daddy."
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, there's some amazing moments in this book. We are almost out of time. Can you give us a website and let us know if you're going to be giving any readings anytime
mm-hmm.
soon?
My website is annserling.com, and I also have a Facebook. Ann Serling Books will lead you to my Facebook. I'll send you
I think
that
if they Google your name, they'll find you.
Okay.
Annesserling.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll be able to find it. Any readings coming up? I understood that you might have some.
Yes. June, I think it's the 2nd, at Barnes & Noble, and then one in Binghamton. I think it's June 14th. I'll have to check on those dates.
Yeah. Well, I think people will probably see the publicity, and they can look on your website, perhaps, and see it. Well, Ann Serling, it's been a delight to have you on. Thank you so much. And really, people, go out and read this book. It's about our culture. It's about our history of television, one of the most amazing shows that was ever on TV, in my opinion. The book is called As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, and it's by his daughter, Ann Serling. Ann Serling, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.